Good evening, Zimbabwe. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America on Wednesday, April 27th, 2016. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Chris Gandhi.
And I'm Marvelous Mhlanga Nyahuye.
Here are our top stories this evening.
ZANU-PF officials threaten to kill MDCT supporters in Mashingo province.
Zimbabwe's Speaker of Parliament is set to bring back home some women currently stuck in Kuwait.
United States Ambassador to Zimbabwe says targeted sanctions are not hurting Zimbabwe.
And former Education Minister David Coulthard launches his book on Zimbabwe's political struggles. The ZANU-PF leadership in Gudu, Mashingo province, has threatened to punish supporters of the MDCT who recently attended a rally addressed by their party leader, Morgan Tsvangirai. Our correspondent, Gandri Maramba, reports.
The threats were made at a meeting called by the ZANU-PF leadership in Gudu South and Chief Makore, who were asked by local people that attended Tsvangirai's rally, where he urged his supporters to resist food politicization. Addressing spooked villagers at Chaitemura in Ward 27, several ZANU-PF officials threatened to kill some of the villagers who attended the Tsvangirai meeting, saying it was illegal in the area to attend opposition events. ZANU-PF District War Collaborators Chairman Joseph Msasiwa, who is popularly known as Comrade Fodo, threatened to punish the villagers with death and had a list of names of villagers that attended Tsvangirai's rally.
I don't want to waste your time. There are people who attended that rally without being allowed to do so by their village heads. I had those who went to that men's rally, and I want to tell you that I will go their doors and paint them with blood. And if you see that blood, it's the end of you. Don't cry foul and accuse others of selling you out. You went to that rally in broad daylight and you were seen.
Fodo threatened to take immediate action against the villagers.
It's time for you to repent or you will see hell.
ZANU-PF chairman of the same district, Rabson Manzunzu, also threatened to shoot some of the villagers who attended Tsvangirai's rally.
Government does not buy bullets so that we shoot trees. I will shoot people, not trees. They is this lady, chief of Makovere. She is in village head's wife. I caught her inciting people to go home and leave this meeting. I will start with her. I will shoot her. All village heads who attended the opposition meetings will be relieved of their duties and replaced by loyal party youths.
Chief Makore, whose real name is Justius Muzenda, openly declared that he was a member of the ruling ZANU-PF party and banned opposition party meetings and rallies in his area.
I called you to this meeting. I heard people saying this meeting is ZANU-PF but was called by Chief. How can this not be a ZANU-PF meeting when all traditional leaders belong to the ruling party? We are all ZANU-PF and even my village heads.
The chief further threatened to forcibly remove councillors, including Ward 27 representative Jephthah Tsangemare, accused of inviting Tsvangirai to Gudu South. He also accused Tsangemare of convening the rally against a one-month public holiday in his area, declared to mourn the chief's late father who died last month. But Tsangemare scoffed at the threats, saying the chief does not have power to fire him.
If the chief, have got any power of firing me from my position, which I was voted by the people, so he can do so. But to my right, the people who voted me are going to say.
Some villagers say violence is resurfacing in the province ahead of the 2018 general elections. Reporting for Studio 7 in Mashingo, this is Gandhi Maramba.
Speaker of Parliament Jacob Mudenda says he has negotiated for the repatriation of 32 women and girls who were trafficked to Kuwait under the guise of finding greener passes but were later abused by locals. In an exclusive interview with Studio 7, Mudenda said that he is set to return home with the women on Friday. Hundreds of Zimbabwean women and girls were trafficked to Kuwait, where they were turned into sex slaves while others performed menial jobs. A couple of agents representing companies that recruited them have already appeared in court facing charges of human trafficking. Mudenda tells us more on his visit to Kuwait with a parliamentary delegation.
Yes, we discussed the issue extensively, although it was not the major issue of our visit. It's a matter that arose after my delegation had been briefed by our ambassador here in Kuwait, and the narrative was very sad indeed, because it actually verges on criminality by characters in Zimbabwe and here in Kuwait, who actually conned these young women with the promise of some attractive employment, only to be turned into some form of slavery with some elements of abuse. And I'm happy to say that after our discussion with the acting Prime Minister, who is also Minister of Foreign Affairs, we agreed that the 32 young women be repatriated back to Zimbabwe. And we are making necessary arrangements.
So is this going to be at the government's expense?
We have made some contact with well-wishers here in Kuwait and at home. I'm happy that we have put together the resources to pay their one-way ticket back to Zimbabwe.
That was the Speaker of Parliament, Jacob Mudenda, speaking with Studio 7 from Kuwait.
United States Ambassador to Zimbabwe Harry Thomas Jr. says Washington is ready to engage Harare and has dismissed claims that his country's sanctions regime have hurt Zimbabwe's economy. In this first edition of a two-part report, Studio 7's Blessing Zulu reports on sanctions and new lines of credit for Zimbabwe.
Zimbabwe's debt distress remains the major hurdle for achieving its development objectives. As a first step toward normalizing relations with creditors, Zimbabwean authorities have developed a strategy for clearing arrears owed to international finance institutions. The plan received strong support from creditors and development partners at a meeting on the sidelines of the 2015 annual meetings of the International Monetary Fund and the World Bank in Lima, Peru. But Shidomu Nyati, an independent public affairs consultant, says it is not likely that the arrears clearance plan will succeed without the complete support of the U.S. because of the restrictive provisions under the Zimbabwe Democracy and Economic Recovery Act, or ZIDERA. Unlike the Staff Monitored Program, or SMP, which is approved by the IMF's management, a fund financial arrangement, new loans or budgetary support requires the approval of the IMF Executive Board. The U.S. effectively has veto power on the IMF Executive Board to approve or deny fund financial arrangements. The U.S. has similar controlling power in the World Bank. Asked about this, Ambassador Thomas says it is still premature to talk about the action the U.S. will take.
Let me be clear. Zimbabwe is not eligible for loans from international financial institutions because, as you know, they stopped paying before 1999, and that made Zimbabwe ineligible. That has nothing to do with ZIDERA. We do encourage economic reform. We would like to see economic reform. We're very encouraged by meetings in Lima. We'll have to see what happens in May, but there's a long way to go before there would be any discussion of monies and disbursement. So it's premature to talk at this point about new lending.
The Sunday Mail newspaper recently accused the United States of crippling Harare's economy by targeting banks dealing with Zimbabwe. But Ambassador Thomas says what has hurt Zimbabwe's economy more is its failure to reform and deal with corruption and not sanctions.
Our sanctions are on 98 individuals, 68 companies. If that one of those listed companies or individuals are trying to enact transitions, that is when Zedera takes place. I think the challenge Zimbabwe has as a dollar economy is that you have to perform as a dollar economy. That means the highest standards. That means lack of corruption. That means open transparency. But in no way are we trying to effect regime change.
In February 1962, President John F. Kennedy proclaimed an embargo on trade between the United States and Cuba in response to certain actions taken by the Cuban government and directed the Departments of Commerce and the Treasury to implement the embargo, which remains in place today. But on April 11, 2015, Presidents Barack Obama and Raul Castro shook hands at the Summit of the Americas in Panama, marking the first meeting between a U.S. and Cuban head of state since the two countries severed ties in 1961. The meeting came 4 months after the presidents announced that their countries would restore diplomatic relations and gave rise to President Obama's March 2016 visit to Cuba, the first by a sitting president in over 85 years. But the question is, why not Zimbabwe? International Crisis Group Southern Africa Project Director Pius Pigu says it's like comparing apples and oranges.
I think the big question, though, is that each case is considered on its own merits, and it may well be that the decision in the case of Cuba is that at this stage, moving towards the lifting of those measures is seen as positive, that adequate and certain steps have been taken. Perhaps in connection with Zimbabwe, they don't see those same steps being made and they're still concerned about some of those issues.
A ZANU-PF chairman for the UK province, Nick Mangwana, says Mr. Mugabe is targeted because he is a Pan-Africanist.
It is because of the position that President Mugabe takes on the international stage. He fights against the overwhelming force of America and its hegemony.
The United States implemented the targeted sanctions program in 2003 as a result of what it alleges to be actions and policies of certain members of the government of Zimbabwe and other persons undermining democratic institutions and processes in Zimbabwe. But Harare says sanctions were imposed because it embarked on a land reform program to address the colonial imbalances. Reporting for Studio 7, this is Blessing Zulu in Washington, D.C.